are listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for industry news, data, and prices. I'm Amanda Buckle, flying solo this week as my regular co-host, Lauren Castiglione, enjoys spring break, but I won't be alone for too long. This week on Catch the Current, I've got two special guests joining me, one being Charlotte Langley, the CEO and president of Langley Foods and its new tin seafood line, Nice Cans. This interview was so much fun and I'm so excited for you to listen to it, and I'm counting down until I can try these cans for myself. But before I play Charlotte's interview, we've got Undercurrent News' very own Jacob Resnick on the line, who is just back from Alaska, where he spent a couple of days covering compfish from Kodiak. Jacob was the one responsible for keeping the live blog going during the event, so he's the best person for all the scoop from tariffs to NOAA. All right, so Jacob, gonna toss you a softball here. For those not familiar with compfish, can you tell us a little bit about the event?
Yeah, compfish is interesting. It's the major seafood expo for commercial fishing in Alaska, and it's a little different than other trade shows that I've been to where, you know, there are marketing and sales people, but it's not like trying to do a lot of deals on the side or things like that. It's really set up more for the commercial harvesters to hear the science, hear from their political representatives, and also talk back to the people that, you know, who represent them in the U.S. Congress, in the state government, ask questions and have a direct interface from, you know, Alaska's pretty middle class commercial harvesting fleet and the regulators and the policymakers. So it's a very egalitarian affair. A lot of people in, you know, flannel and rubber boots and things like that, talking to the representatives in Washington, D.C. and Juneau, Alaska. So you learn a lot, and it's kind of a big part of compfish. For the regulators and the policymakers, there's a lot of listening involved of what the concerns are from the fleet and from processors of what they need for the upcoming season. It's sandwiched right when the pollock season is winding down, but before the processors and the commercial harvesters are gearing up for, you know, Alaska's storied wild salmon runs. So okay. It's just kind of a little calm before the summer storm.
Yeah, but this year, the timing of the event is just even more important considering what's going on just in the U.S. right now with tariffs, with the President Donald Trump administration going after different agencies, including NOAA. And Jacob, you were reporting live from Kodiak on all this. So in your opinion, I mean, what was the big headline to come out of the event? What did everyone want to talk about while they were there?
Well, what was going on, I mean, what's really going on is just there's so much uncertainty in the sector. And I know that's not a big surprise for people who are listening about this, but, you know, Alaska, for U.S., in the U.S., Alaska is like the poster child for, you know, vulnerable seafood sectors. I mean, I think it's about 2/3 of its seafood is exported overseas. And the top valued U.S. seafood products in the U.S., the top three that go to China, they come from Alaska. You know, we're talking about head and gutted flatfish, head and gutted Pacific salmon, mostly pink salmon, and also fish meal.
And the tariff right now is 145% plus, or that's like the starting point from Trump. So not a good look for Alaska right now and China.
Right. So there's two different things going on here. So for one thing, so if we want to talk about salmon for a second, the Alaska salmon industry, because the salmon it's a wild stock, it comes fast and furious. You know, for a century, it was canned. You know, that's how you bring this fresh fish in, you get it, you preserve it, and you can put it on the shelf. The U.S. market's kind of moved away from canned salmon. I mean, there was a kind of a slight recovery like around the pandemic when people wanted to stock their pantries. But for the most part, people have gone away from that. But the way that the salmon industry was able to make it economical to do all that, you know, processing is they would freeze it, head and gutted, freeze it, send it overseas for secondary processing. And in China is really done, has the most capacity for that. So as they moved away from canning, they go to China. Now the tariff situation, as most of our listeners know, if it's re-imported back to the US, the tariffs would only apply to the value added on that. But a lot of the salmon that Alaska exports is for Asian markets. And with 145%, you know, that's just not economical. And it's not like, you know, the Chinese customers don't have a choice. I mean, they can import Russian, they can buy Russian salmon, which is a very, the Russian pink salmon is a really good product. So there's a lot of trepidation right now in Alaska. Like, what are we going to do with all these pinks that come in? Where our market's going to be? They put a brave face on it and talk about how, it's a beautiful fish and more Americans should be eating it. And that's probably true. But the fact is, to have the capacity to process this fish and, to be ready for the American consumer would require a major recapitalization. It's not something you can just stand up in a couple months.
Okay, so
So
there's, yeah, they don't
we don't
have
know
this,
what's going to happen.
yeah, they don't have this ability right now to do this
Right.
in the US. They have to send it out to China. So, yeah, it's not a quick switch and
So yeah, we walked through processing plants, and we've got an upcoming story about that, about how, Alaska processors are very good at what they do, which is processing fish really quickly as the volumes come in, but there's not a lot of slack in the system. So, there's not a lot of cold storage capacity, for example. So if there aren't immediate buyers for this fish, no one really knows where it's going to go.
Yeah, when you said uncertainty, that is the definition right there. That is a lot of uncertainty right there. And now, Comfish had quite a few politicians right in attendance. Were any of them able to give some reassurance that that they're working with the Trump administration to find a resolution, or what's the thought there?
So the two that appeared in person were U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. She came to Kodiak and she walked the docks. She met with fishermen. She met with the press. She toured around, and her staff has been working really hard to get clarity on what's happening with, the agency NOAA that does the science-based fisheries management. Behind the scenes, they've expressed frustration of how difficult it is to get clear answers of what's going on with the agency. Okay, yes, there'll be cuts. How many cuts to which programs, et cetera, et cetera. That's something they're working on really hard. There's an undercurrent reported on all this. For example, the continuing resolution that's funding the U.S. federal government right now, it doesn't go into detail on how the monies should be spent. So the agencies have broad authority. They just have these like giant slush funds to spend as they want, and that means money for things like stock surveys or grants that fund state fisheries management, things like that. None of that is in the bill, so it all requires good faith and a relatively young administration who's purged a lot of their technocratic staff to keep things working. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes to make sure that, the lights stay on for, U.S. fisheries management, especially in somewhere like Alaska, where so much of the fisheries management is in the EEZ.
I actually had a question there because when we were in Boston for Seafood Expo North America, NOAA representatives didn't show up to a panel that they were supposed to speak at. So, was anybody in from NOAA in attendance at Comfish to kind of even answer all these questions, provide any sort of comfort, maybe?
Right. We had three actually excellent presentations from NOAA staff. Two of those were virtual because they weren't allowed to travel. The travel restrictions were such that they weren't allowed to come from Juneau, which is, in Alaska terms, not that far. It's a couple quick commercial flights. The only NOAA official who was able to come, his lab is across town in Kodiak. So, he joked like, yes, I was allowed to cross this little bridge that divides a part of the downtown Kodiak. He came down and talked about the latest in crab surveys. But the NOAA's top science officials who run the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, et cetera, they came in virtually, and they didn't have a lot of hard answers. They weren't not being coy. It was pretty clear that they were delivering the information that they could, but there is, again, I keep going about this uncertainty of not just what kind of cuts, but how many cuts and what agencies. I mean, I'll give you a concrete example. There's a lot of questions about the upcoming stock surveys, the trawl surveys, which is, required for the pollock fisheries, the crab fisheries in the Bering Sea, Aleutian Islands, Gulf of Alaska. Fortunately, one of the pollock surveys in the Gulf of Alaska was able to go this year. But the top NOAA official, and we pressed him on this, he honestly couldn't give any concrete assurances that the other trawl surveys are going forward. And that's something that Lisa Murkowski's office, as well as a number of industry groups, have, expressed concern at the highest levels. These stock surveys have to go forward for the Magnuson-Stevens Act, science-based fishery management, for it to function. We're just coming out of Pollock A. They've got the survey for Pollock B, but this would be for, looking forward to next year. They
Okay.
can't have too much gap in the surveys because that would expose them to all kinds of liabilities.
Yeah.
You got to make sure they don't, overfish.
But now this is something that now these politicians have to keep on top of everything else going on.
Right.
And but the thing is that you don't have to keep on top of this because you the listener, because that's why we have Jacob here. our top reporter, getting everything from what's going on in Alaska and reporting it for Undercurrent News. Jacob, you're gonna have to send me over your LinkedIn handle so we can get everybody to follow you on there as you keep reporting on all this good stuff. Any final takeaways from Confish? I'm gonna link to the blog so that way everybody who missed your coverage can catch up on all the good stuff. But yeah, any final thoughts from the event?
There were lots of little news nuggets. I would encourage people, this is self-serving, but I would encourage people to look at our blog. We had things for example, where you had Alaska legislative leaders saying that the Alaska governor's farm fish bill is basically dead in the water because of she stated the parliamentary and maneuvering. She's tabled the bill. It's not going to get any more hearings. So, no farm fish in Alaska, at least for this legislative session. There's been a couple more renominations to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. The balance of that council has been really interesting between groundfish trawl interests and other gear types and tribal groups. So that's something to watch coming up. And also we just got some interesting information from McKinley Research, where they talk about how exposed Alaska is to these Chinese tariffs. We talked about earlier how the top three U.S. exports that go to China are from Alaska. So yeah, we detail all that on Undercurrent, and we've got some other stories coming up.
If the seafood industry is having an event, Undercurrent News is there covering it. Coming up, Undercurrent's team of reporters will be reporting live from Barcelona, Spain for Seafood Expo Global. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a moment of the coverage. Now, without any further ado, let's hear from Charlotte Langley of Nice Cans. On the pod with us today is Charlotte Langley, CEO and president of the newly launched consumer foods branding company, Langley Foods. And one of the brands under Langley Foods is certainly turning heads, and that's tinned seafood line Nice Cans. So first off, welcome, Charlotte.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very thrilled to be here today.
So I love the name Nice Cans, and I'm dying to know the story behind it, and I'm sure it's got to be a good story, isn't it?
I think it's a pretty good story. Well, Nice Cans, the name is exactly what it is. We have nice cans. Like, it's the name of what we do, right in the title right there.
They are nice cans.
They are nice cans. And the name is like meant to be like boldly cheeky, like nice cans also have some other connotations around other things, which people can lend their imagination to. But as a female founded brand, I wanted to celebrate like cheeky, bold, delicious, fun vibes. And it kind of just happened naturally. I was like, okay, well, what's a fun name for a brand that's gonna like sort of stand out, that like really like has a lot of my personality in it, who's also a bully, cheeky woman. And the Nice Can just sort of rolled off the tongue. And at first I was like entertaining other names and like this conserva, that thing, what it may be, but Nice Can just stuck. And as I started talking about it more, the feedback was so good. People were so excited and there was lots of laughs. And humor is very important to me too. So that's sort of, it sums me up very perfectly, actually.
It's eye-catching, it's fun, and I think in seafood too, what we've been talking about lately is breathing some fun and breathing some new life into the industry. And especially with a new brand like this, you
Absolutely.
have the perfect opportunity to do this. But you are not a newcomer to the industry. You're also the
No.
co-founder of Scout Canning. So what led you to leave that, essentially a baby and start a new baby?
Is that a new baby? Well, like
Is that
I can have
a thing?
children, I
Is that, I guess
guess.
I'm a mom. That's probably not a thing to say, start a new baby.
Well, no,
Have a
well,
new
sorry.
baby.
Have a new baby. Yeah, as
There we go.
having a new baby. Well, in all honesty, I founded Scout in 2014, and I've been in the seafood sector for almost 22 years and the chef for 25 years. And I was trying to find a way to sort of bring a product outside of my doors and my restaurant doors. And that's where sort of Scout Canning began, which was like, how do I take my passion for ocean sustainability, delicious flavors, diversification of species consumption to the market? I was doing that in my restaurants. I was like, how do I get that out of my restaurants to get more people interested in this sort of space of delicious, sustainable seafood? So Scout Kate was born from that sort of mission and passion. So from there, I spent like many years ad hocing stuff at home, looking for equipment, buying old canning equipment, like lots of weird like things you do in your kitchen or in your garage or whatever, just figuring out how this all works. And canning made the most sense to me because it has like no plastic in the supply chain. The product stays in the shelf stable for a really long time, so you can have it in your pantry for 3 to 5 years. You can, there's no cold chain required in shipping. So there's like less cost for shipping and uses less energy for shipping. So there's like eco positive things about canning specifically that really attracted me because I really much care about planet health as well as I care about people and quality and delicious things. So I started just like playing around with lots of stuff. And Scout didn't launch like commercially, I guess you would say, until 2020, which was a really fun year, as we all can remember, the year that shall not be named.
I don't know, you're starting this
Was
company also in a really interesting year, so we'll
I
get to that in a
know,
little
I
bit.
know, I know. It's actually, I have the strangest luck, I gotta tell you. But anyway, it's much bigger than me. The company initially started out as a small, like, craft model to get like farmers market, small grocery, small bodega, not like large independent, not mass. The idea was never mass. And as we were growing the brand after we launched in 2020, the team that I had sort of working with me were really attracted to mass. And I was less attracted to mass. And mass as in like mass consumer markets, like, Costco, Kroger, Amazon at that point, because I wanted to grow like kind of slow and steadily and just gently because I'm a very patient person. And my chef training is like one thing I always say to chefs and cooks is don't do it to just do it to do it well. So for me, it's like taking your time to do things well. And when Scout got to the stage where we had a lot of VC cash, and this was like early 2000s, like it was like 2016 to 2018, 19 is when we started bringing like more venture capital money. And what that typically means, or what can happen, is that there is so much growth expected with that type of investment that you can't really scale as fast as you need to, unless you look at other categories, for example, more commoditized products that are the market's used to seeing. For example, tuna. Most people eat canned tuna in Canada, North America, so they're used to seeing that product in market. To be more attractive to the general consumer market, we're skewing more towards these like consumer products that people already recognize. For me, I don't want to just be a part of the norm. I want to disrupt. I want to break apart the mold. I want to rip things apart and put it back together in a unique way. I look at creative solutions and all these different models, and we can get into that later too. But for me, it was heading in a direction that was not really to my taste anymore. I was like, I think it's getting too big too soon, and it's not growing like the way that I always wanted it to, and that wasn't really in my control anymore, even to so, and to like manage it the way that I wanted to manage it. So I chose to exit Scout in November 2023, and that was a hard move for me because it was my first baby, and I'd spent a long time learning about like how this category works and what CPG looks like and all these sort of things. So I spent some time just sort of thinking about what I wanted to do and reevaluating my life a lot and having funny dreams. And Nice Cans sort of came naturally. And I was like, how about I do this the way that I wanted to do it in a bit more so delicious, gentle way? And it just sort of was the right timing for me, in all honesty, because with culinary and cooking and life, timing is very important. So Nice Cans timing came about well. And I had all these established relationships that really supported the timing of this version, of this canning, of the seafood sector and the canning industry that I'm very attracted to. Plus, I know I'm more confident now with the space as well.
That's really great. You launched something that you're passionate about. You gained all this knowledge. That's a really bold and strong move to realize that it wasn't a direction that you're going in, and to be able to make that decision, because that is a very hard decision to make. But then you created Nice Cans.
I create a nice can, exactly.
And I was going to say, is like I like that you brought up, talking about canned tuna, because that is your immediate thought in the canned space goes to tuna. And right now, Nice Cans is just focusing on sardines. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's our first SKU, and there is a reason behind that. And the reason behind that is I don't own my own cannery. Like building your own cannery is a pretty capital intensive project, and I would love to have my own cannery one day, and fingers crossed that happens. So your option is really to work with co-packers. And in Canada, there are not a lot of co-packers or micro canneries that are even available, like that even exist. There used to be a lot, but now there's not many. I would say there's like three or four. And there used to be hundreds. So I had to sort of like look outside the box, literally, to find another co-packing partnership. And I had spent some time in Portugal exploring conservas and the culture and the amazing history of that space. And I became very good friends with a company called José Gourmet. And they have a whole line of conservas that are delicious and beautiful, and they're many different species. And they're considered to be they're the smallest cannery in Portugal, in Porto. So I was speaking with them. I did some R&D there. I did lots of trials and testing on lots of different species and different flavors. But a foundational part of my business is sustainability and sourcing. And there's a company, it's a global NGO, it's called MSC, or the Marine Stewardship Council. I also happen to be their Canadian Chef Ambassador, and have been for 8 years now, which is amazing. But that is sort of, that is a global sustainability standard for around sourcing and harvesting and packaging distribution. It's like a transparency in the supply chain. It's all these great things. So there weren't many other species available in Porto that are MSC certified. There's not a lot available at this time. So I worked with Jose Gourmet to encourage them to become an MSC certified facility, which they agreed to once they sort of recognized the value of a label, but also the transparency in the sourcing and the sustainability industry that we can now use. And sardines were the only species that are available in that region, that are local to that region, that can be certified.
Okay.
So that's why we're launching with sardines. From like a pure like logistical standpoint. But I also was like, I love sardines. And they're so delicious and oily and full of omegas and all the protein hits that everybody talks about in marketing and media and kids in the world these days. So I want, and I never got to really can sardines. I canned other products. So I was like, this is an opportunity for me to really like dive deep literally into this sort of like oilier fish and make it sing. Because for me, the product has to be delicious first. Like it has to be absolutely delicious. And a lot of cans that are out there are excellent, but they're not like flavor forward. They don't like, you know, the deliciousness isn't at the front of the game. It's more about production and, you know, for mass. So I made three recipes that I think are absolutely delicious, and they're all certified, and they're all sardines, three variations. But in the pipeline, I have some other species that I'm working with, because now that I've encouraged Jose Gourmet to become a certified plant, guess what? The fishery around them, the community around them is going, how do we get certified? How do we bring these other products to market? Which is really the most positive like ripple effect that I like, ever asked for. It is amazing. And the MSC team is like, wow, you're just an ambassador, like talking to consumers. And now you're like getting canneries and processing plants certified, which is the best. I think it's like the best possible outcome, because I care about the oceans and the environment, like I mentioned.
Yeah, no, what a great feeling to be able to see that happening around you. That's so cool. The thing too with sardines right now is I think they are kind of having a moment, and 210 Analytics, they just put out a report, like sales and pounds sold were up in March. And why do you think that is? But why do you think consumers are choosing sardines right now?
Well, I think there's probably a few reasons. One of the reasons is definitely like the popularity of tin fish conservas, canned seafood in North America specifically is on the rise, thanks to a lot of brands like Scout, like Fishwife, like Bella, like Taylor Shellfish, like Ikone, like all these brands that are now in North America and have been around for a long time. Some of them are really pushing for larger consumer engagement. Like they, you know, they're putting ad spend behind things. They're doing lots of pop-ups and events. They're launching different flavors. They're doing cool collabs with, you know, a sauce, a condiment line that pairs well with, you know, all these, they're doing all these things. So they're putting like marketing dollars behind the species. And you also look at some of the trends of how people are eating. You know, they want to eat things that are like highly nutritional dense, that are high in protein. Like that protein trend is not going anywhere, going away anytime soon, I don't think. High omega, brain food, they don't want seed oils, like all these things that people are now asking for because they're a more educated consumer. Sardines offer those things. So I think those are probably the two biggest reasons. And also if you look at it from like a scientific lens, in a sense, the biomass is improving, which means that there's more of a species available. So that means that the stocks are improving and are healthier, which makes the product more available to also process and harvest.
Okay. One of the things is sustainability. And I think it's been such a hot topic for so long. But right now, I think all really anybody can talk about is Trump, the tariffs, and, you know, grocery prices. And, you know, one of the things that 210 Analytics also reported on is that they're seeing a rise in people buying shelf stable products, as they're just like, you know, like just in case things start to rise in price, at least I have this in the house. So, you know, I want to circle back to, you know, you're talking about COVID, you know, launching then. And then, now you're launching now during at a trade war. So
it's terrifying for everybody. You know, I think that for different categories of product, like producers and processors, and it's different for everybody. For example, in North America, we produce a lot of raw materials, right? Like fish, oil, grain, et cetera. And then it has to go through a processing scenario. And then the processing thing is like, you know, the first process goes into like, you know, makes flour that then goes to be sold to make bread or noodles. And we have been so fortunate to have like this great relationship for so long where we were selling raw materials and then selling them to go through their first transformation. So what is interesting to me, or like trying to find creative solutions, like that's my favorite category is creative solutions, is looking at where the sourcing is coming from, and like what it looks like to do a simple transformation, and or setting up direct trade routes to maintain that sort of value to the consumer, which means instead of going like from here to here to here, as in like from one country to another country to another country, having to pass through all these tariff boundaries and all these extra taxes get added on. Finding the most direct routes possible, which means finding new relationships and creating new pathways to get where it needs to go. When it comes to like, you know, putting pantry staple or putting shelf stable foods in their pantry, I think that's always just for me like a nice thing to have because they're very convenient and it's a great way to whip up a meal anytime. And it's like, you know, and it's high protein, healthy, et cetera. So I have to say, because of the category that I'm in, which is a tin fish category at this time, as before we expand to other SKUs. The tariffs are on aluminum. The tariffs are not necessarily on the finished good. There's sort of a blanket tip. I think I haven't checked the news today, which means this could be different, but it's around 10% as a blanketed tax. So what I'm trying to do is find direct routes. I'm talking to my co-packers and processors and trying to find unique revenue share models and cost sharing models. So the hit is balanced between myself and them. And it's not just like translated through one, like I buy at a raw cost and then like, you know, pump the price up to cover that tariff cost. How do we find ways to sort of share that and hopefully grow out of that together as a global entity? And also really hammering in and dialing in on the cost of goods. So what is the true value and where can we get creative or find solutions as a group to solve these things? I have to say though, it is a bit of a specialty product. Like it's not your $14.99 or above product at this time. And I'm speaking Canadian dollars, so everybody knows. It lands in the market, like you can buy it on my website for $9.99. A bit more than your 99-cent can of tuna, but that's a whole other conversation around traceability and things along the supply chain that aren't as lovely. And having a higher premium product, you know, there's a lot of fear around people not being able to afford it. So my mission is to find a whole range of products in different cost scenarios where everyone can get a taste of nice cans and enjoy it, no matter their budget.
Okay, so has that led you then to when you're talking potentially expanding the line, has that led you to explore the different species that you might not have been maybe considering initially?
Yeah, absolutely. It also, there's a lot of other brands that are getting really creative in this space as well. I'm going to use Patagonia Provisions as a really good example. They just launched sardines and beans. So in the can is a high protein packed can with sardines, and I think they're using white beans. I don't know, maybe it's chickpeas, but well, maybe both. And that still gives you like that protein hit and the flavors and like that oceanic vibe and the convenience and all the things. But they've cut down some of the seafood in the can, which makes that price point a bit more attractive because they're using supplementing ingredients. That is an interesting solution. So looking at things like that, adding like vegetable or seaweed or grains to sort of keep that going, but make it more like a meal in a can or like something that's also still convenient. That's definitely something that we're looking at, but also looking at other more biodiverse species, like around like the shellfish category, mussels and clams. They typically are lower cost because they're easy to grow, have less inputs, need less processing, like as in you're not feeding them fertilizer and paying, you know, buying corn to feed them. They feed themselves from the sea. So species like that and getting creative in that space is also definitely in my R&D plan.
Wow, I always love talking to people about their R&D plans because that seems definitely like the best part of anybody's job
Oh,
in the
it's so
seafood
fun.
space.
It's so fun. It's so fun. I just came back from doing 3 days of R&D in a remote microcannery up in Quebec, and it's so much fun. It's like I'm a chef, right? So I like to play with flavors and stretch the boundaries of this category because it's been kind of the same for a long time. And what I mean by the same is like the regulations have been the same for like, you know, 110 years. How do I get into that place and like, how can I affect acidity? How can I make it creamier? How do I bring texture here? Like all these different things that I can have some fun in the R&D side of things. It's actually the best. It's like the best part of the job,
Oh,
playing
100%.
around in the kitchen.
100%. So, could you tell us? You have three flavors that Nice Cans has out right now. Can you tell us what those three flavors are?
Absolutely. So the three lines of sardine flavors, we've got smoked with sea salt and organic olive oil. that's sort of like your entry level, like people like smoked fish, they're gonna like this one, I would assume. That's my assumption and hope. The second one is fennel, pepper, and rosemary. So the fennel and rosemary grow all over the wilds of Portugal. And fennel pepper has always been like my favorite sort of combo when it comes to seafood. I put it on scallops, with lobster, with chowder, what have you. So that one is very much like my palette. There's like my favorite one because it's like my flavor profile. People that know me know that fennel is my vibe.
Okay.
So that one's really, and it's also an organic olive oil. And then the third one is like a roasted red pepper and tomato passata, like sauce, but it has some apple cider vinegar in it, so it brings a bit of punch and brightness to the dish, to the can. And that one has sort of like the has the most acidity to it, so it's really refreshing and kind of surprises your palate a little bit, which is not typical to a canned sardine. So they kind of lend themselves in the different places of your daily use, you know. Crack
Yeah.
can go for quick consumption. The tomato passata one is great in pasta, obviously. Like the sardinesca is a total moment. And the fennel pepper one is the one that's going to be the star of the show on your charcuterie board. But
Ooh,
you can
all
use it
right.
anywhere.
No, and I want to encourage everyone. So it's justnicecans.com. You
Correct.
also have an Instagram that has just beautiful photos and recipe ideas, which I
Thank
need
you.
as much inspiration when it comes to tinned seafood. And I'm one of those people that gets stuck, and I have a hard time thinking outside of the can, honestly. So I liked your Instagram and your website for that. So thank you. And one of the
Thank
other
you.
cool things I recommend, so when you scroll over the page, the mouse is actually a little fish. It's the cutest thing.
It's the branded sardine from the package. So that was a sort of a fun moment that we were able to figure out using this the template, because that is a template from Shopify. And you have to, and finding creative ways in there, it's, you know, also challenging. But thank you.
No,
I love that too. Some people are
yeah.
like, it's kind of weird. I'm like, yeah, but look how cute it is. And like, it kind of is interactive. And my
Oh my
favorite page
gosh, I
is the
had so much
about
fun.
page.
I was
My
going
90s Teen Beat vibe that we all like recognize, because I was born in the 80s. So I'm like,
to say.
this is the flavor that I'm going for.
Maybe that's why I'm connecting with you.
Maybe.
Maybe
We're
that's
80s
why
babies.
we're 80s babies. I'm like, and then maybe I'm like, I love the vibe of this page. But the About Us page, it had me cracking up. Building a world where sexy, sustainable, and seriously delicious go hand in hand. I love that. Okay, so
Absolutely.
that, and this is where this is the perfect way to end it. What do you find sexy about seafood?
Oh, there's so many things that are sexy about seafood. I have to say, I can talk romantically about it very easily because it's not just the visual feel of like a beautiful, sleek fish, like, you know, zooming through the ocean. Like, it's powerful, it's sleek, it's like confident, it knows where it's going, it has its mission, its goals, etc. Like, that's like some, you know, paint that vision in your head, like a tuna or something, like being like, I'm a bullet to the sea, like being a badass. There's also what you eat makes you feel sexy and confident and good. So having like healthy, nutritious food, sustainably sourced, that has these like great values around the sourcing, the relationships, the co-packing, all that sort of stuff, that is also sexy. And the transparency and the partnerships that I have, you know, that's sexy. And then that's the lifestyle that I want to live, is like having these things that trigger how I feel about my life and the choices that I'm making as a consumer. So why not add a twist to your can serve a life and choose something boldly delicious and sexy?
That's amazing. And I think fans would definitely do fans of the seafood. Can fans. I think
And
can fans would
fins.
do that, because I think, I mean,
Yeah.
again, the packaging, once you see the seafood and once you taste it, I mean, that obviously
It
sells the
speaks for
product.
itself.
Yeah, but you have to still get somebody to get that in their cart. And again, the packaging, the name, nice cans,
Thank you.
you're doing
Cheeky, delicious. Thank you.
it.
I'm very happy with how it all works, how it's all working out. It was a bit of a crunch time, like to get this all sort of set up and going. It's been a very short period of time from ideation to launch, which I'm very proud of as well. And I also was able to launch at a much lower price tag than other brands because of the relationships that I've developed over the last 10, 15 years in the industry. It's been a very, I think, unique model to build.
And we're excited to and see how Ling Li Foods grows. So, Charlotte, thank you so much for joining us on Catch
Thank
the Current. And we'll
you.
have to have you on again soon.